I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway, and it's great to have you with us. On Thursday, trade talks are set to resume between the U.S. and China as a trade war between the nations that's lasted more than a year continues. Joining me now from Washington is Peter Navarro, assistant to the president and director of the Office of Trade and Manufacturing Policy. Peter, welcome to The Takeaway.
Great pleasure to be with you, Ms. Vega.
So let's start with the U.S.-Japan trade agreement that the Trump administration released yesterday. It looks like digital protections are pretty strong, and the U.S. beef and pork and cheese industries are coming out as winners. Question for you. All these benefits would have been locked in with the TPP partnership, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Was it worth backing out of that for this deal?
Absolutely. The difference between a bilateral trade deal with Japan and being in the TPP is a huge difference. Here's the problem we had with the TPP. We already had trade agreements with six of the countries within the TPP. The other five countries, Japan comprised over 90% of the GDP. So we really would have had to give away a lot in order to get what we got from Japan, including both our auto and auto parts industry. The deal we got with Japan, we didn't have to do that. So it was really a great victory for President Trump and a great stroke of negotiating by Ambassador Robert Lighthizer.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that did have to get given away here. There was the U.S. rice industry, propane, semiconductors, and there are currently no protections against currency manipulation. Was it worth it?
This is a great deal with Japan. I'm surprised, actually, that one would question what was one of the great deals that we've struck so far. I mean, to date, we struck the deal with Japan. We have the Canada and Mexico deal on the table, waiting only for Nancy Pelosi to put it on the floor. This president is doing remarkable things. We have China at the negotiating table. It would have been a horrible mistake for the U.S. to enter the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We basically would have had to divide our manufacturing base up between 11 different countries in order to get very modest benefits.
You said, as we mentioned at the top, China and the U.S. are at the negotiating table starting later this week. Trade negotiations are about to resume. What's going to happen, Peter, for you to consider these talks a success?
It all begins with what I've referred to as the seven deadly sins, the seven structural problems that we face with China. And for your listeners, it's really important to understand that context. Let me go through them quickly and briefly. You have the cyber hacking of our business computers to steal our trade secrets. You have the intellectual property theft, which costs America the order of several hundred billion dollars a year. Forced technology transfer is a condition if you're an American company and you want market access to China, absolutely against the rules of the World Trade Organization. China massively dumps products below cost into our markets, costs us factories and jobs. They run on state-owned enterprises against American corporations, massively subsidized. That's not fair. Currency manipulation is a huge problem. And one of the things that really is important to President Trump and myself, made in China, fentanyl and other opioids will kill over 100 Americans by this day's end, over 1,000 by the end of this week, and over 50,000 a year. And the Chinese keep promising they're going to handle that. They haven't. So that's the context. We did have a deal with them about 6 months ago on the table to deal with those seven verticals. It would have been a great deal for the world. They backed away from it. So the success metric here is based on that original deal that they reneged on. Let's see where we get to.
Let's talk a little bit about how politics is going to play into this, Peter. I mean, in advance of these talks with China, the president asked China to investigate his political rival, Joe Biden. Do you think that's going to have any effect on what's happening this week?
No.
Well, the House impeachment inquiry, speaking about that, is taking up a lot of the president's bandwidth right now. Do you think China, I mean, can't China just afford to prolong these talks up until the election, the next election?
So there's really two questions there. I think it's a tragedy for this nation for the president to have to take up so much bandwidth, as you refer to it. For me, there's only one question related to impeachment that needs answering, and that's simply this: are the Democrats trying to overthrow a duly elected president because they can't beat him at the ballot box? I call that the Al Green question, because that's what Congressman Al Green admitted. This is a divisive process. The thing I can tell you, Ms. Vega, being at the White House from day one and going through an earlier witch hunt with the Mueller crisis, is the president stays absolutely focused on the mission, which is to create good jobs at good wages for the American people. We're at 6 million jobs and counting, over 500,000 manufacturing jobs. And we have the lowest unemployment rate since a man walked on the moon. Impeach that.
Well, we're talking with Peter Navarro, assistant to the president. Peter, I want to touch on a number of things you just mentioned here. We'll pivot for a second here to the U.S. economy. You were on CNBC on September 30th, and you were asked specifically about manufacturing. Let's take a listen to what your response was.
I don't even know why you're going down this path. This Trump economy is strong as a rock. Manufacturing is strong as a rock.
So let's break that down. To your point, unemployment has hit a 50-year low here in the United States, but manufacturing in particular, Peter, is not doing so well. The day after you were on CNBC, the Institute for Supply Management Factory Index showed that the manufacturing sector was at its weakest point since the Great Recession. How do you respond?
I look very carefully at the numbers. The biggest problem that we're facing right now is the Federal Reserve's policy on interest rates, which is wildly out of synchronization with the central banks of the rest of the world. When Jerome Powell assumed the chairmanship of the Fed, he began a very aggressive rate hike. Now, what that does for your listeners to understand is that drives up the higher interest rates, then drive up the value of the U.S. dollar. Then a stronger dollar reduces our exports, and that reduces our export growth. And we saw that in the Q2 numbers, where we lost 2/3 of a point of growth. We were down at around 2%, 2.1%, instead of closer to 3%, simply because of those interest rates. The Fed is killing us, and meanwhile, the European Central Bank is lowering their rates faster now than we are lowering ours. So for me, as the director of the Office of Trade Manufacturing Policy, it's deeply concerning that those interest rates are too high and that the currency, the dollar, is way overvalued relative to what it should be. So, but every day we work on this, and we have created over 500,000 manufacturing jobs, and that's compared to the 200,000 manufacturing jobs lost during the Obama-Biden years.
Last week, however, the Labor Department employment numbers showed that there were 2,000 jobs lost in manufacturing for September. How do you respond to those? How do you explain those losses?
2,000 jobs in a how many people in the workforce? Over 100 million in the workforce? That's not a big number, I would say. I think that the important thing is here in the Trump economy that everyone who wants a job can get a job. Everybody who wants to look for a better job has the option to do that. Wages are rising, and I am continually puzzled by people wringing their hands over issues of recession or complaining about this or complaining about that, when we have historically low unemployment rates for blacks, for Hispanics, for women, for veterans, for the disabled. And, my job is to get up every day and try to create jobs for the working men and women who work with their hands. President does the same thing, except he's also got to worry about national security, border security, and other things.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because there's a lot to unpack there. On Friday's job report, it showed that wage growth here has slowed. The conservative U.S. Chamber of Commerce, in fact, has called for an end to the trade war with China. And you've got financial institutions like Goldman Sachs and Bank of America who say that this is sort of stalling the U.S. economy. Are they wrong? And how do you respond to the slowing wage growth?
They are wrong. The nomenclature of this so-called trade war with China, as I spoke earlier about the seven deadly sins, it's not really about a trade war. A trade war something you can settle, say, with Japan or Mexico or Canada, where they lower their tariffs and we lower ours. The China problem is the theft of intellectual property, the forced technology transfer, the hacking of our computers, the currency manipulations. It's not a trade negotiation. It's really a negotiation about bringing about a fundamental change in a communist country's state capitalism, which really is unfair to the rest of the world. So, that's what this is about. When I hear Goldman Sachs or Wall Street or the Business Roundtable, those are the people who supported the offshoring of American jobs for the last 20 years. So I don't find that they have a credibility. Again, over 500,000 manufacturing jobs President Trump has created. And when he was campaigning, everybody said that manufacturing was dead and that would never happen. This is truly a Trump miracle. And, myself, this week I'll be in Philadelphia at the Philadelphia Shipyard trying to rejuvenate that shipyard. I've been to Marinette, Wisconsin, where they're building littoral combat
ships. Peter, I just want to get, we're coming at the end of this segment. Sure. I just want to make sure we get in a question about aid in particular. There are the farmers in particular. The president has said he supports this group of workers in particular, and they've received $28 billion in farm aid over the past 2 years, and their soybean exports have been cut significantly since this quote-unquote trade war has begun. How do you respond to that?
Look, here's my final word. President Trump has the back of the farmers, but listen to the signal, ignore the noise. President Trump stands up to China. He creates jobs, secures our borders, and he gets us out of foreign wars. That's the signal received loud and clear by the Trump base, and it's called America. So just ignore the noise and see what this president
A little bit more noise for you before we let you go, Peter. You mentioned NAFTA's replacement, USMCA. It still needs congressional approval. Got about 30 seconds left. Do you expect the impeachment inquiry to affect chances of its passage?
Nancy Pelosi has a choice. She's got a choice, partisan politics or prosperity for the country. It's a one-person choice, so she's got to make that. And whether impeachment affects that, it's going to be on her own conscience.
Peter Navarro is an assistant to the president and the director of the Office of Trade and Manufacturing Policy. Peter, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.